hospitality industry is a business, so we should just teach all business and have some examples of hospitality. And I think that's a huge, huge mistake. And the reason is that at the end of the day, the hospitality industry is all about creating incredible guest experience.
Welcome to The Turndown. This week, I'm exceptionally humbled and excited to introduce you to Dr. Stowe Shoemaker, an industry veteran, a professor, a expert in everything pricing, distribution, casinos. And I had the pleasure, the honor to sit down with him and spend almost an hour with him diving into the role of hospitality, the future of hospitality. How do we make the job of hospitality interesting again for future generation? Now, with that, can't wait for you to discover Stowe Shoemaker. Stowe, welcome to The Turndown. It's a pleasure to have you here. I can't wait to pick your brain on everything hospitality, recent trends, innovation, challenges and opportunities that this beautiful industry is facing. Welcome to the program.
Well, thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here and I love your podcast. So it's really an honor for me to be asked, to be honest. So thank you.
The honor is all mine. Stowe, I want to look back at your career and I want to understand and want our listeners to understand how you ended up in hospitality, because I'm sure there's a good story around that. Like, we don't just wake up one day and say we want to be working in hospitality. How did you discover this?
When I was really little, I used to always plan dinners for my parents, and I would cook with my neighbor, and we would cook these dinners, and I just loved it. And my grandmother used to say to me, "You should go into hospitality because you like to play so much," and she's not realizing how hard a job it really was. But she said, "You love to play, you love people, so you should really think about hospitality." And when I was in high school, I worked, to help afford going to school, I worked in a kitchen and I just loved it. And so then when I was in college, I, worked for the on-campus dining and did the catering and just really fell in love with it. And I thought, wow, I can get paid to do something that's really enjoyable. And I think I have a little, I can't sit still for a while. So hospitality, you're always doing something different. And so that kind of, I just fell in love with the industry.
And generally, right, in hospitality, we have two paths, or we have many paths, but there's two big paths. There's the food and beverage path avenue,
yes,
and there's the rooms path avenue. It sounds to me that you went through the food and beverage path. Is that fair?
I really went through both. I mean, to be frank, I started in food and beverage and fell in love with it, worked in the summer resort and worked on the the room side. And then the person I worked with at the summer resort bought the Middlebury Inn in Middlebury, Vermont. And so then was working on the room side. But then I realized we needed business, so I started doing sales. But sales didn't sound as sexy as marketing, so I said I was marketing. But I really did sales. And just really, just whole loved the business. But then what was really interesting, I was always curious as to why people make decisions on where they travel. So after 8 years in the hospitality business, I left to go study at the University of Massachusetts and earn my master's in hospitality with a focus on marketing and consumer research. And then I left that and took a job in Southern California. So I moved from the East Coast to Southern California at like 32, called my parents, said, "You've ruined a third of my life. I got out to Southern California, okay, the beaches, the big sky, the sun," and really did consumer research in the hospitality industry. So if you've ever had the chicken soft taco, we took that, the company I worked with, we took that from product development to product launch.
Fantastic.
So
I don't think I've had that taco, but now I need to make an extra trip out.
Yeah.
I'll be in San Diego in January, so maybe I'll discover.
Well, they're sold all over the world, and Taco Bell's have the chicken soft taco.
Yeah.
But I just fell in love with the industry.
And then you became an educator at some point.
Yes.
Right?
So when I was in the consumer research business, we did obviously a lot of consumer research, and I learned really cool stuff, but we couldn't share it with anybody because it was just for proprietary.
Proprietary.
Yeah. And so I thought, I'd love to write. I'd love to publish. And so I thought, well, I'm going to become an academic. So I went back and did my PhD, because I really believe that when you learn something, you want to share it. You want knowledge to be shared by everybody so everybody can improve upon it. So an academic career allowed me to publish, learn cool stuff, and then teach others some cool stuff so they could even have better careers than I ever had. So it's been really I've really been blessed, to be frank.
I also feel, and you must, I'm sure I appreciate that as well, when you read something or you consume information, that's very different from then telling your best friend or your colleague about it, right? Like the concept of actually communicating back knowledge makes you appreciate or makes you understand that knowledge, that information very differently. Is that fair?
It's very fair, because I think in order to share knowledge, you have to make sure you really understand it, right? Because you can't just sort of BS your way through stuff, because students will ask you, well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean by that? So you really have to be prepared. Like, I spent a lot of time preparing for lectures and always thinking, what were the questions that students might ask and how do I make sure I have that knowledge? And, you know, I was very fortunate. I also spent like 23 or 24 years on the executive education faculty at Cornell University. So there you're working with, you know, executives who really are in the industry. They know the industry. And so you have to think, well, how can I teach them something that they maybe already knew but they forgot, but how to get them to think about things differently? So you really have to spend a lot of time thinking about how's the best way to present this information that gets them excited about learning it and makes them go, oh, yeah, I remember that, but we sort of forgot about it over time.
Yeah. You were based for a good portion of, I guess, your education career in Las Vegas. You worked at one of the most important hospitality schools in North America. From what, 2013 to 2023, you probably shaped the minds of hundreds of hotel leaders now.
Yeah, well, so actually, I've had two tours at UNLV. So I was there from 1995 to 2003. And then my wife, at 40, or actually 50, she decided to do a PhD. So we moved to Texas for 8 years. And then I came back to Las Vegas in 2012. And then I became dean in 2013. But so I had a huge influence on a lot of students, but as did all our faculty.
Wow, that's amazing. And you've seen casinos go through substantial changes.
Unbelievable changes, yes.
In 20, 30, well, 30 years almost, if my math is correct.
Yeah, because I really started, when I moved to Southern California, the gentleman I worked with, we opened a research office in Las Vegas, because we were, you know, did a lot of work, as I said, with Taco Bell. And so I started coming to Las Vegas in 1986, even before, you know, the Mirage was getting built. And there was no forum shops at Caesar's Palace or anything like that. So I've seen Las Vegas just change tremendously. And the industry has really changed. You know, now, as you know, Las Vegas has become very much a sports town. We had Formula One. We have the Las Vegas Raiders, who had an amazing night last night. And we're going to have the Super Bowl this year. So the whole industry has changed. Amazing.
Yeah. And Vegas, for a good duration of the last 20 years, has become a huge conference destination.
Absolutely.
As well, right?
Like, absolutely. You know, we like to say that, you know, Mr. Wynn changed the face of Las Vegas by building the Mirage and Bellagio. But it was really Mr. Sheldon Adelson who changed the foundation and function of Las Vegas. And we moved from a gaming town to really what we call the, you know, MICE business, meetings, incentives, conventions, and expositions. And that's really Mr. Adelson's legacy, because now everything is convention-oriented, which is great.
You may know this offhand, but, you know, especially I recall hearing that Vegas was giving out hotel rooms because the gaming revenue was more important, right? Like almost for free, or it was accessible. gaming revenues as a percentage now of total revenue must be minimal. I hear the food and beverage is higher. I hear convention revenues are higher and rooms revenue are proportionately higher to gaming revenue. Is that fair?
So if you look at the percentage of spend, you know, about 30% of a person's spend is on gambling and the rest is spent food, beverage, entertainment. So yes, gambling has certainly gone down. The revenues in gaming are just tremendous. But yes, the room revenue, food and beverage, all that is really high.
You've been in hospitality schools for a long time. Recently, we've noticed a few schools removing the name hospitality from their degrees.
Yes.
I want to get your sense of why that is happening, and is that the right thing?
So actually, it's in my view, and the way I've really positioned the Harrah College of Hospitality at UNLV is to move away from that. I did my PhD, as you know, at Cornell University, and they took their School of Hospitality, and now they're part of the Johnson College of Business. Michigan State, their hospitality program is in the business school. Same at the University of Denver. Even sort of the famous hotel school in Switzerland, where I was really fortunate to teach, called Hotelier de Lausanne, has now changed their name to include hospitality business. And I think the belief is, well, the hospitality industry is a business, so we should just teach all business and have some examples of hospitality. And I think that's a huge, huge mistake. And the reason is that at the end of the day, the hospitality industry is all about creating incredible guest experiences, right? And understanding how to think about service, how to think about hospitality really becomes critical. And yes, there's certainly business components in the hospitality industry, but there's also the fine arts, right? You think about fine arts and architecture with the atmospheric. There's also an incredible amount of engineering that goes into putting things, systems together, technology. So by becoming a business school with hospitality examples, you don't really prepare the student for what the industry is all about. And we like to say at UNLV that we are a hospitality school that steals from business, we steal from fine arts, we steal from engineering, and we steal from the sciences in order to provide a great customer experience. And I'll just tell one quick story. You know, the thing I always say is people will say, well, hospitality, it's not rocket science. And I say, well, let's think about what does it take to launch a rocket? It takes a lot of math. It takes a long lead time. It takes a lot of different people, different skills, right? You only get one chance to make it correct. And I go, that sounds like a wedding, right? And so there's a lot of science in that. And so by pulling from different disciplines, we've been able to create a curriculum that really focuses on what's the core of hospitality. But then students have 30 credits, which is essentially 10 classes of electives that they can focus in meetings and events, they can focus in gaming, they can focus on the entertainment side. And I think we've either invented the future or we invented the ETSO, because most other hospitality schools are going the business school route. We've taken a totally different track.
Oh, that's interesting. I mean, we've gone through a terrible pandemic that has seen a lot of people leave the industry as a whole, right? And depending on who I speak to, it doesn't really matter who I speak to, hotel leaders, owners and operators, if they tell me one thing that worries them is recruitment, staffing, finding that next leader that can either replace them or manage the businesses, if you will. What do we need to do as an industry to make, I guess, the future generation passionate about hospitality? And just like you were at some point, right? Like you joined this industry and you felt passionate about it. I joined this industry. I was a hotelier in my first career, feeling extremely passionate about my career choices. But what needs to happen, in your opinion, for us to make it attractive?
So we have to really discuss, I always say to students, hospitality, it's not a job, it's a passion, right? And I always tell, we talk to students and we say, look, you either have the gene and the desire to serve and the desire to make other people happy. And so how do we sort of spark that within you, I think is your question. And I think it starts at an early age, right? Mm-hmm. It starts in high schools, where you have the culinary academies, where kids are learning to be in food and beverage, and they're learning how to serve and how to cook, and all that becomes exciting. And then I think starting to do at UNLV is we're going to be putting together a summer camp at some point, where we bring high school mm-hmm. kids in and expose them to the industry. And then I think when they're in school, you give them incredible opportunities. Like at UNLV, you know, we built a new hospitality hall building that it's a hospitality space that doubles as a classroom. So we have a coffee shop in there that students run and operate. We feed all the student athletes in another building. We have incredible internships and mentorships. So you expose students to this exciting industry and they see, wow, there's incredible opportunities. I can work anywhere in the world. You know, every day is going to be very different. Yes, I'm going to work hard, but everybody works hard, right? I always say to kids, you know, if you always look at the clock, you'll always be a hand, right? And whether you're a lawyer or your doctor, you never just work 8 to 5. And so why don't you do a job that you mm-hmm. love and you're passionate about, where every day is different? And there's nothing better. You know, you were in the industry, so you know, I mean, there's nothing better that like at 2 a.m, you finish with this big banquet, right? And you've all been working your butts off to get this right. And people are leaving and they're happy and they're clapping. And you're all sitting around and you're sort of sharing war stories from what happened, you know, like what went wrong and what guests were jerks and what guests were wonderful. And that camaraderie, I don't think there's any field that has that sense of real camaraderie. And that you get kids excited about that. And that's what we have to do, is we have to get them excited about the industry.
And it almost sounds very early. Start early.
Yes. Yes.
Right? Like they have to be in high school already knowing they want to go into
yes.
hospitality.
Yes. And then what we try to do is also people who were in other areas, get them excited about that a degree in hospitality can fit into any areas. Like, you know, I just wrote a book called Hospitable Healthcare, which brings hospitality principles into healthcare. So let's say you want to be in the healthcare profession. Well, you should know something about hospitality. Right. So then some of those kids who start working in healthcare go, oh, well, it's not really for me, but I love the whole idea of service. Then we get them into hospitality. And even kids, you know, with our industry is so diverse, as you know. So I made Love Mathematics. And, wow, I could work for a company like MGM doing data analytics, right? So I'm in the industry. I'm learning about how to make people have a better experience, right? So that gets me in the industry, but lets me focus on the mathematics that I love, right? So instead of learning how to sell more cans of soup, I'm learning how do we create great experiences.
That's fascinating. How has the curriculum changed in 40, 50 years? When you think of hospitality, what you've taught back in 1993, when I think you first joined UNLV, to, you know, when you stopped, which I believe was 2023, you must have seen some evolution.
The curriculum's really changed. You know, I remember when I was looking at doing my master's degree, you know, I mm-hmm. interviewed, obviously, not obviously, but I went and looked at Cornell. I decided to go to University of Massachusetts, as I mentioned. But I remember even at Cornell and at the food courses, you'd have food science classes where you spent a lot of time learning the food science of cooking. And we kind of moved, we definitely moved away from that. But I think the way the curriculum's changed is that we were here's the way, it's kind of a pendulum. So we became very early on, the hospitality programs were very operational driven, food and beverage, you know, rooms divisions, all those kinds of classes. And then over time, we became much more of a business curriculum, right? Where we made sure we had marketing, finance, accounting, human resources, and all that. And that trend has continued, and we've had less kind of the operational side. So when I became dean at UNLV, UNLV was going to that same trend because Cornell was doing it, everybody was doing it. And we got together as a faculty and we said, well, wait a minute, are we really going in the right direction? So we put on an event we called Hospitality 2025. And we brought in all the industry leaders in town and our alumni, and we did this whole day event out. What is the future of hospitality? What is the future of education? What are the needs that you see the industry is going to have? And how do we redesign our curriculum? So we worked with a consultant and the faculty. Everything at a university is driven by the faculty, you know, the faculty on the curriculum. So our faculty got together and said, okay, let's really think about how do we make sure that we're a hospitality school and not a business school with hospitality examples. And so we've actually gone back now, and as I mentioned earlier, we have 30 credits of electives. So we have the core classes in hospitality where we're focusing on food and beverage. We're focusing on services. You know, we have some basic finance and accounting classes and certainly HR and leadership classes. But we also are bringing in a lot of classes in depth at those 10 credits of electives, those 10 courses in electives that could be really operationally driven. You know, we have 1,000 hours of required internship work experience, and then we have internships that students have to take.
Okay.
So all of that is bringing the operational side back. And I think that's critical because what happens is if you're a business school with hospitality examples, you don't know how hard the industry is, right? So you get out and you go, oh my God, this is a lot of work. Where if you're really involved in it all along, you know that it's hard work and you know you'll stay in the industry. So we've kind of had this pendulum where now I think most hospitality schools are more business oriented. We're trying to go back a little bit. And so if you have the, you know, the separate schools like the Culinary Institute, which are very much very operational, cook-driven, you know, cooking-driven. But they've even started to move by offering, you know, management classes.
I must share a personal experience. I traveled to Southeast Asia in September, and it was refreshing to stay in some of the luxury hotels in Thailand. And I was reminded what, and it sounds really horrible because I don't want to say that North American or European hotels are on a different scale, but in Thailand, luxury hospitality is different. It is just, I had so many staff members approach me before me even opening my mouth and say, how can I help you? Right. And it was a very different experience. And it was really nice. But what I also, when I sat down with the hotel owners and operators, they own and operate the properties end to end. There is no franchisee. There is no management company. It's owned and operated by everyone. So, you know, where they put the money, where they do the investment, they decide this themselves. And, you know, they're defining their operational standards, if you will. And I thought that was quite refreshing in a way, unfortunately. Do you think that our ownership structure, I guess, in North America has shaped some of the educational curriculums, the hospitality schools, in a way?
Absolutely. I think you take a look. So for the listener who may not be quite aware, you know, the whole strategy of hospitality companies are now known as what is called asset light. In other words, we don't really own the properties ourselves. We're just really a branding company. And that really started in the late 80s when Steve Bollenbach was the CFO of Marriott. And he split Marriott into two companies, Host Marriott, which owned the asset, and then Marriott International, which basically managed the asset. And the idea was then Mary, I could grow by having entrepreneurs who wanted to be in the hotel business buy their brand. And that is now this kind of the standard of all the operating companies. So, you know, Cornell took a huge advantage of this. It really is really the leader in kind of teaching, you know, hotel investment, asset management, things like that. Michigan State has a very strong program. You know, we're starting to develop that in UNLV with working with the Lee Business School, who has a great finance and real estate division. How do we bring those two together? We're not at the level yet that Cornell is or Michigan State, although we do have kids who graduated who are very much owners and operators of properties. But as the mentality changes, that as the owner is more of an entrepreneur who wants a steady investment, it's not about the service as much as it is about how do I get the best return on that asset. And so I think the business hospitality schools have taken a role into move into that direction. But I think there still are people who own and operate hotels, even though there may be a franchise of a Marriott, who really want to provide that great experience. And so there's always going to be outliers, but you can find great service experiences. And I think what the brands have done, they've tried to create that culture, what it means to be a Hilton, and they've incorporated that in all their training programs, all their evaluations, so that you're staying at a Hilton and it may have a different ownership, but you still have that Hilton promise. And I think the brands have, that's what they've really done, is how do we create what it means to be at a Hilton, what does it mean to be at a Marriott, and how do we design our set standards and systems in place and the culture so that's what it turns out to be. I don't know if that's answered your question.
No, it does. It does. I'm curious about, you know, your future vision. You talked about the Hospitality 2025, right? Let's fast forward to sort of the next milestone, which could be 2035, right, if you will. What do you see happening, I guess, from a travel behavior perspective? What's changing?
What's changing is that people realize they need travel. You know, I think coming out of the COVID, we talked about revenge travel, right? But I think people realize that I want to have fun. I don't want to work all the time. I want to have fun. So I believe that the travel is just going to become even more and more important, right? Especially with the millennials, the kids who are working in tech, you know, they're working when they kind of want to work. They work all the time. My nieces are both in tech, and I mean, they travel all over, just they're like nomads, but they work 20 hours a day. But when they want to play, they want to have fun and they want to have experiences, right? So we're seeing very much more and more moving further along to those experience economies. Like, and how could we, you know, we think about the hospitality industry, how can we create environments that are authentic, that are unique, and give the guest what he or she wants at a time and place that they want it? And so I think our industry is always going to be evolving to create these great experiences. And you think about the traditional hotel room. I was with some folks last night from Panasonic, and what they're doing in the projection systems, where you can have a little projector in your light. So you turn on the light and you can change what your wall looks like, right? And so it's, I think we're going to see more of that kind of, I'm going to customize my hotel room for the kind of pictures I want and not just sort of that standard stuff.
So we've gone from maybe pay TV to bring your own account, right? You can bring out your Netflix account, right? And your point is technology in room will evolve that I can design my own look and feel of what this hotel room will actually be.
Because, you know, at the end of the day, everybody says, oh, I want to be great experiences. I want to try something new. But they also want to eat their American breakfast when you're in Europe, right? They want to eat the kind of food they like. They may try something unique, but they kind of want to be comfortable. They want to watch the TV shows that they like to watch in bed. And so it's giving them some great experiences, but also providing it so they're not totally out of their comfort zone.
Yeah, there's comfort in, I guess,
there is comfort
in that, right? Yes. The things you're comfortable, right? Like, you know, we probably joke, but where do we sleep right. the best? In our own bed. Like the bed could be as fluffy and as beautiful and as, you know, heavenly as some of the brands, you know, promote, but it's still at home that you probably
sleep
the best.
And if you have, if we can put on our, you know, on our phones, we can project our phones onto this TV there, we have that sense of comfort. But yeah, I think so. I think that the innovation that's happening in our industry is going to be incredible. Certainly on the technology side, but even on the building side, where you can see, you know, not just the doubled doors that kind of open up into a room, but how do we make it so the rooms could become really bigger or smaller by just removing walls? And I think there's a lot of excitement happening. Yeah, I wish I was younger and just entering the industry.
That's fantastic.
It's going to change. But at the end of the day, what we're doing is we're giving customers great service. We're providing them with memorable experiences. And that's exciting.
That is exciting. And I loved your comment also around that this is, you know, we have revenge travel, but it's going to be sustainable travel, meaning this sort of need to travel will continue to exist and will continue to grow, because I guess we're realizing how important travel was in those 3 or 2 years or 1 year, depending on where you
right.
were, that you couldn't travel, that you couldn't move around, that you couldn't catch up with friends and family or discover new things and then have great experiences.
I was just going to say one thing, and I think the one thing that's really changing in the industry too is we're becoming much more concerned about sustainability. Right. I was just in London in October with the Sustainable Hospitality Alliance, which is made up of all the major hospitality brands around the world, really looking at how do we become more sustainable, right? How do we be concerned about food waste, and how do we make sure we rescue food to give to others? How do we make sure we're not wasting water or lighting and all that? And that's a real challenge, and I think that's exciting, and that's where our industry steals from engineering, right? I could be in the hospitality industry taking courses in engineering to learn about electronics so I can see how I can minimize my use of energy, all that sort of stuff. And MGM has built one of the largest solar plants in Nevada so they can heat a lot of their buildings. So that's another trend I want to just throw out.
Yeah, and it's so super important, right? Because by us moving around,
huge
we have
footprint.
A footprint, whether we like it or not. By us leaving the house, getting into a car, making it to the airport, you have an impact. And how do you minimize that, or how control the impact that you have in a way that
yeah,
is
I sustainable sold my private jet so I could just fly commercial, so that because I knew
fantastic,
I wish
fantastic.
I had a private jet.
I do want to talk a little bit about your book and hospitable healthcare, because I love the connection of healthcare and hospitality, right? And why the two are, I guess, need to come together in a way. Maybe that's, you know, my sort of assessment, but maybe I'd love your perspective on that.
So, you know, if you ask anybody, you know, think about their last healthcare visit, right? But think about their experience. Everybody has some horror stories, right, that they would love to share. And I was very fortunate when my wife went back to do her PhD, we moved to Texas. And she went to Texas A&M. And when I was in Texas, I did a big project with Memorial Hermann Healthcare and really starting to bring hospitality principles into healthcare. And then I ended up having a joint appointment at MD Anderson. University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center. Mm-hmm. And they approached me and said, you know, we have people who are really sick, really, you know, cancer patients, and we're not sure we're giving them the best experience possible. We're giving them great care, right? But they said, we're not sure we're providing them with making them feel like they've had a great experience. And how can hospitality help them. And so, you know, I got really excited about that. And I did a big project to really look at how do we bring hospitality principles into healthcare. And when I started the research, we did a lot of in-depth interviews with cancer patients, with physicians, with the staff, the nurses and everything. And my wife was involved in that project as she was, you know, working on her PhD. And her PhD was in communications and negotiations. And, you know, I would come home and I'd say, oh, yeah, are they guests? Are they patients? Are they customers? And my wife said, well, let's really talk to them. What do they think about themselves? And so what she found in the research was that people wanted to be loved family members. They wanted to be called loved family members. And that just really changed my view on everything. And it changed the view of the hospital. And so everything we did at Anderson was, how do we make people feel like loved family members, right? And when you translate that into hospitality, we want people to feel like they're coming home, right? They're coming to our hotel, they're coming to our restaurant. And we want to treat them like we would treat our own friends who are coming to visit us. And so the research I did was, it changed my life because it's fun to, you know, I've done a lot of research with hospitality firms and it's really fun to do all that. But thinking about people who are in really needs, right? How can we help them was really truly revolutionary. And so I saw that this real connection between bringing hospitality principles into healthcare. So that's how I kind of fell in love with it.
Yeah, that makes sense. And is it, I mean, I would have the hypothesis that by bringing these principles into healthcare, you can extend life expectancy. You can actually, you know, improve their experiences and make them feel in their sickness better about themselves and hopefully give them, I guess, more time. If that's, I don't know whether you have data around that, but I'm curious whether you've noticed an impact of, you know, bringing these hospitality principles into healthcare.
So essentially what happened was my co-author is a guy named Peter Yesevich. And Peter had a big advertising agency and he sold that advertising agency. And then he ended up working 10 years for Cancer Treatment Centers of America. We ran into each other at a conference because he had helped me on a couple of other books. So he'd helped me on my marketing textbook. And we ran into each other at the conference. And I said, Peter, what have you been doing lately? He goes, oh, I've been working for Cancer Treatment Centers of America. And I said, oh, I've been working for MD Anderson. So we chatted about that. And then we ran into each other again. And he called me and he said, hey, Stowe, we should write a book on bringing hospitality principles into healthcare. And I thought, yeah, that sounds like a great idea. But we didn't want to be two guys with an opinion, right? So what we did is we said, okay, if we're going to do this, let's do it really, let's take an academic approach to it. So what we did is we went out and we did 25 in-depth interviews with people from the Mayo Clinic, right? People from the Cleveland Clinic, people from Geisinger Health. But then we also interviewed people like Horst Schultze from Ritz-Carlton, and we interviewed people from the Dorchester Collection. And we really said, you know, what's kind of happening in your areas that are creating great experiences? What are you doing? And then what we did is we went out and we surveyed 1,200 consumers across the U.S. who had visited, you know, a hospital, a walk-in clinic, a doctor's office, gone to a restaurant, and stayed in a hotel. Because everybody says, oh, healthcare does not, people aren't as satisfied in healthcare as they are in hospitality, anecdotally. So we went out and we said, yes, that's actually true. So we identified kind of like 18 similar points of kind of what happens in both fields. And we had things like, and I have to put on my glasses so I can read, but, you know, things like the invoice and the bill I receive is easy to understand. You know, the provider appreciates my business. The people I interact with make me feel welcome. You know, these kind of really attributes that are in both. And we kind of found out that healthcare does not do as well as hospitality. So we wanted to go back and we said, well, why is that? What has hospitality done? And so we went back and we actually started looking at hospitality from the time that Kermit Wilson, you know, took his famous drive from Memphis to Washington, D.C., came home and created Holiday Inn. And what did he do? And how has the industry changed over the 30 years? And then all of a sudden, now, where is healthcare in that same journey? And that's how we kind of put the book together. Does that all make sense?
It does. It does. I'm going to go check it out now. But I love the principle and the combination of both. Right? Like, I think both industry can learn from each other. But maybe your hypothesis, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that healthcare can actually learn a lot about hospitality.
What we did is, we called the payer model. Kind of a play on words, because in healthcare they talk about the payor. So we came up with payer. And essentially we thought, well, what is that healthcare, that, what is it hospitality does that can be translated into healthcare? Well, one, the first is P, we prepare for the customer's visit, right? Before you go to a restaurant or hotel, we've prepared for your arrival. So when you show up, we know exactly who you are, right? We anticipate the angst that a person's going to feel, right? Because even when you're going on your vacation, you're wondering, oh my gosh, is it going to be any good, right? Will there be Wi-Fi?
There be Wi-Fi?
we engage, you know, we prepare, we anticipate, but then we engage, right? That moment of truth when the customer meets the guest or meets the employee. But then after the stay, we also evaluate how well are we doing. And then we also reward for their behavior. So we took this payer model and we said, we gave a lot of it for every chapter in the book. We give examples of what well-known healthcare providers have done on preparation, what well-known hospitality companies have done, and recommendations for each one. And so that's how we really designed the book. So the book is filled with lots of examples and a little self-promotion. It's available on Amazon. There's also a Kindle version. But getting back to your earlier question, will it make people feel healthier and get better? And I did some additional research for a gentleman named Jeff Arnold, who created WebMD. And Jeff has created a new company called ShareCare. And part of the ShareCare division is they have what they call WeCare. And most, you know, companies give employees, savings accounts so they can pay for their medical expenses. But what WeCare does is they give travel credits. So in other words, if you take your medicine, do all the things you're supposed to do, you can earn points, and then those points can be done for travel. And so I did all this research to see if in fact that's true. Would people do that? And it was amazing that I could use travel to be healthier, right? And so we think with the book, bringing hospitality principles into it, rewarding people for doing the things you're supposed to do, it makes a lot of sense. And it's funny that I had to go out and do all this research, because I remember when I was little, every time I brushed my teeth, I'd get a star, right? And if I had enough stars, my mom would give me an allowance. So it's really just the old brushing your teeth principle.
Yeah, fantastic. Now I'm curious on what you spent the money on when you were young. Was it candy or was it something else?
It was on travel.
Yeah. We didn't start this podcast with my typical question, but I'd like to end it with it, right? If that makes any sense, which is, you know, so what is keeping you up at night as you think of hospitality?
I think what really keeps me up at night a lot is how do we continue to attract kids to enter this amazing industry? You know, what can we do to bring more people into the industry is one thing that really is important to me. Another thing that's really critically important to me is how do we provide an opportunity for people who are working in the industry to get their college degree. And because a lot of kids start in the industry and they never go back to school. And they start working, they're making good money, but they know that they need more knowledge. And how do we make it accessible for them to earn a college degree? And one thing I'm really proud about is we're working very closely with the Panda Restaurant Group, which owns Panda Express. And Panda Express has what they call Panda University, where they teach all their employees all the critical things they need to learn. And we're so excited that we worked very closely with Dr. Churn and Mr. Churn, who are the founders of the company, where we actually went, our faculty went, and we spent really a week learning everything that they're teaching their Panda employees. And then we had a faculty member who's very involved with the curriculum. We went back and we mapped what Panda University is teaching their employees. How does that map back to our curriculum? And so now employees who are working for Panda Express can earn university credits. So instead of having to take 120 credits to get a degree, they only maybe need to take 100 credits. And because we're offering our program online, so now kids who are working in industry, they can get credit for what they've already been doing, and then they can learn new things. And we think that is the future. And what keeps me awake is how do we make sure we do more of that? And you think about, you know, diversity, equity, and inclusion. You know, we have a fair amount of diverse people working in the industry. How do we make sure that they have that educational opportunities? And we think that our work with Panda Express is really going to be the model for the future that we're most excited about. So all that keeps me awake in terms of how do we make that happen?
All right, final two questions. One is all-time favorite casino, past or present, right, whichever it is. And then second, I'd love to know where are you traveling to next? So wherever you want to start.
Okay, well, you know, I loved the Cosmopolitan when I was in Las Vegas. One of my students that I've been one of my favorites from all times, a woman named Colleen Birch. She was there for many years and really was part of the team that really turned it around to make it a beautiful place. Now she's just moved to become the CEO of the Fountain Blue. So I think the Fountain Blue will become one of my favorites. Sure. But I love MGM Resorts. I think they're doing some great stuff under Bill Hornbuckle, who's one of our graduates. I love all their properties. I think are great. So I'm a big fan of all of those. I go where my students work.
Fantastic answer. And where are you traveling to next?
I think my next trip, my next business trip will probably be to Ithaca, New York. But I think my next big trip is my wife and I will be, it's going to be a couple years away because you have to book these things way in advance. But we're actually going to take a trip from Canada to Greenland.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Nice.
But I think my favorite place in the world is Iceland. And that's because I have some really good friends that live in Iceland, and I just love the people there. But I'm like a dog, really. I'm happy wherever I am.
on that bombshell. Sorry, please.
I was just going to say, every destination I go to, I love because I have students that live there and I see them. And I'm just happy to be able to be fortunate enough to be able to travel. I count my blessings every day.
Fantastic. So on that, thank you so much for joining the program. Thank you so much for joining the Turndown. And I can't wait to hopefully cross paths in person and catch up with you at an upcoming event. Who knows?
I hope so too.
I look forward to meeting you in person.
Thank you very much. It's been an honor being on the program.
Likewise. Thank you for being here. Thank you for listening to The Turndown. Don't forget to subscribe and tune in next week as we discover new exciting guests.